From the City of Angels off the Pacific Ocean, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. It's Friday. Later tonight, those open lines. Plus, we'll talk a little bit about luck. Into the wee hours, a chat with Billy Gibbons also later from ZZ Top. This year, an estimated 1.5 million Americans will declare bankruptcy. Now, many people may chalk that up to the misfortune, overspending, a lavish lifestyle, but a new study suggests that more than 60% of people who go bankrupt are actually capsized by medical bills. Bankruptcies due to medical bills increased by nearly 50% in a six-year period, from 46% in 2001 to 62% in 2007. And most of those who filed for bankruptcy were middle-class homeowners, according to a report that will be published in the August issue of the American Journal of Medicine. Catherine Austin Fitz, she watched the economic trends for us. What do you think of this one, Catherine?
What did you say, George?
What do you think of this one?
Well, you know, it's funny. This is an example of you know, problem and symptom. The ultimate symptom that drove these families into bankruptcy was medical problems. The real problem, though, is corruption. Because if you pull back and you go through their individual situations, what you've got is a whole series of decisions by Wall Street and Washington that ultimately make the healthcare system much more expensive and make it much harder for people to deal with it or to get insurance. So, but what we are seeing across the board is the vast majority of bankruptcies are coming because the incomes, the two income families, have less money to cover basic essentials than you know, the same family did 30 years ago with only one income.
And I guess as some of these folks also get laid off from their jobs, Catherine, and maybe they can't afford their COBRA health insurance payments,
right?
They really run into a mess.
Right. Some of it comes from unemployment and losing their insurance. Some of it comes from the fact that a lot of insurance just doesn't, you know, increasingly doesn't come, you know, it's insurance light. It doesn't cover a lot of the catastrophic situations, and so the bills pile up. Another thing that happens, George, is you get these healthcare emergencies. People borrow money to deal with them and then get caught in a real debt trap.
What is your projection of the next 6 months here, economically?
Well, over the next 6 months, we're going to see more unemployment. You know, we're going to cross the 10% mark. We're up to 9% this month in the official figures. But what you're also going to see happen is now that we've gotten the banks bailed out and stabilized, you're going to see a real push. We saw the Fed chairman say it this week. The international agencies, my prediction, will be used to help it. But real talk and plans, big press conference by the administration this week to radically cut Medicare and Medicaid.
And oil prices are going back up. That's not going to help.
Well, that's oil prices right now are headed up. It's going to be a long summer, and there's a lot of sort of backdoor trading going on. And so remember, inflation can be offset, George, by... It's called demand destruction. If you radically lower the value of labor and collapse incomes in the general population, you can get a deflation trend that will offset the inflation, and that's what we're seeing.
Catherine, your websites?
Solari.com. Go to the blog.
Solari.com. Thanks, Catherine. Days after Air France Flight 447 vanished, an intensive international effort has failed to recover any confirmed wreckage now, and concern grew about whether searchers were even looking in the right place. Air France, meanwhile, has told its pilots in a memo that it is replacing instruments that affect flight speed in all its bigger jets. Investigators have focused on the equipment's possible role in this disaster. Brazilian officials first reported on Tuesday that military pilots had spotted wreckage from Flight 447 scattered across the ocean surface. But pieces pulled out Thursday turned out to be unrelated to the plane. The UN nuclear watchdog has discovered traces of man-made uranium at a second site in Syria, causing fresh concern now about possible undeclared atomic activity in the Arab state. The information comes from reports released Friday by the International Atomic Energy Agency. This agency has been examining U.S. intelligence reports that Syria had almost built a North Korean-designed nuclear reactor meant to yield bomb-grade plutonium before Israel bombed that facility in 2007. A retired State Department worker and his wife have been arrested on charges of spying for Cuba over the last three decades, using grocery carts among their array of tools to pass government secrets, according to an indictment unsealed Friday. The indictment says that Walter Kendall Myers worked his way into higher and higher U.S. security clearances while secretly partnering with his wife, Gwendolyn, as clandestine agents so valued by the Cuban government that they once had a private four-hour meeting with then-President Fidel Castro. In Australia, an American man in Australia pleaded guilty and has been sentenced for the manslaughter of his wife who drowned during their honeymoon scuba diving trip in Australia. Her body was found on the ocean floor. Now, this move outraged the victim's family. David Gabriel Watson will serve just 1 year of the four-and-a-half-year sentence in the death of his wife of only 11 days. She died in 2003 as the couple dove off the tropical coast of Queensland. The suspended sentence is not unusual in such crimes there. Watson of Birmingham, Alabama, was to stand trial in the Queensland Supreme Court for murder, which carried a potential sentence of life in prison, until the prosecution accepted the guilty plea to a lesser charge, and he'll only get 1 year. Police are speculating that the accidental suffocation, not suicide now, may have caused the death of actor David Carradine, whose body was found in a hotel closet in Bangkok, Thailand, with a rope tied to his neck, wrist, and other body parts. Celebrity blogs and social networking websites were abuzz with the news of the death of Carradine, best known for the 1970s television series Kung Fu. The circumstances under which he died have led to speculation that the 72-year-old actor may have been engaged in a very dangerous form of sex play known as autoerotic asphyxiation. Scientists at one of Utah's major new dinosaur quarries have found 60 to 70 new bones this spring, including what appears to be a 20-foot-long neck bone discovered this week. The latest finds there are fresh evidence that the site near Hanksville could be a large and important source of dinosaur bones in the coming years. In South Dakota, a 23-year-old rancher whose family has fallen behind in their taxes and recently had a mobile home repossessed has claimed the $232 million Powerball jackpot, one of the largest undivided jackpots in U.S. history. Neil Wanless, who lives on his family's 320-acre ranch near Mission, South Dakota, bought the winning ticket in a nearby town of Winter late last month during a trip to buy livestock feed. He will take home $88.5 million in a lump sum payment after taxes are deducted. He intends to use the money to help those in need. He says, "My family has been helped by the community, and I intend to repay that help many times over." Isn't that amazing? Tonight, we talk about ghosts, psychic vampires, spirit possession, and exorcisms with Dr. Susan Shumsky next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, I'm George Norrie. I was just asking Tommy, what would he do if he won that $232 million Powerball? Would he take the money in a lump sum, $88 million, or would you take it out over the 20 years, which would be probably about $7 million a year after taxes? He wants it up front. Then I said, "Tommy, what's the first thing you'll do with it?" He said, "I'd buy a Ferrari." And I said, "Cash or finance it?" And he said, "Cash." And I said, "Well, I'll finance it." With all that money, I'd still finance it. Got to use other people's. Author and speaker Susan Shumsky has 40 years experience teaching in the consciousness field. For the past 23 years, Susan has been a ghostbuster and has helped earthbound spirits to cross into the light through a unique method of exorcism called astral healing, a method which can be used by anyone to clear ghosts and other demonic entities in people. Here she is on Coast to Coast. Susan, how are you?
Wonderful. I'm so glad to be here, George.
It's good to have you there. So would you take this thing up front, the lottery money, if you won it, or would you take it over 20 years?
Well, I think I would take a big lump sum right now.
Yeah.
Because who knows what's going to happen in 20 years?
You know, I think everybody would do that. And, you know, speaking of a who knows what's going to happen, you're a pretty prolific writer.
I've written a few books. I actually started writing really late in my life. In 1990, I started writing. But I've had quite a few books published. I have 6 books in print, and I'm working on a 7th right now.
How did you get interested in this field of ghosts, psychic vampires, spirits, exorcisms?
Well, because I had problems with that when I was younger. In fact, it was the 60s, and I was a hippie, and I lived in the San Francisco Bay Area. And, of course, at that time, we were all getting very interested in Eastern wisdom and Eastern philosophy. But the trouble is that the way we were trying to go about experiencing that was through LSD. And that didn't work out too well for me.
No.
As a matter of fact, I got possessed in a very, very terrifying way.
What happened?
Well, you know, on my very first LSD trip, it was so horrible. I was in an apartment with some people, and I was absolutely possessed. And I was stomping on the floor, and at the top of my lungs, I was yelling, "I don't know how to die. I don't know how to die." And I was just yelling that over and over and over. And the hippies, you know, in the apartment, they were
laughing.
Terrified.
Terrified or laughing? I would have said they're laughing.
They were absolutely terrified because I was just in this state. And what happened was I was possessed. And that LSD trip never ended. It went on for months and months, and I was hearing voices. I was hearing what I thought were the thoughts of people around me, and it was just the most terrifying experience. I ended up in the psychiatrist's office, and the psychiatrist was terrified.
Oh, my God, Susan.
It was awful. And as a result of that, I was really became a seeker, and, you know, that experience of LSD just continuing. I was having hallucinations of all different kinds, visual and auditory. And so I ended up, of course, he gave me some drugs. At the time, they gave people Thorazine. It was a long time ago. This was 1966.
This was the college Susan Chomsky?
Yes, it was a very long time ago. And so eventually, you know, thank God for meditation, I found out about transcendental meditation. That was in 1967 that I began transcendental meditation. And very soon after that, I found myself on the banks of the Ganges River in India with Maharishi Mahesh Yogi, who was the guru of the Beatles and of Deepak Chopra.
Oh, sure. Yeah.
And I stayed with him. I was in his ashram for 22 years, and I was on his personal staff for 7 of those years.
And at what point did you get rid of the possession? Was that years gone back?
Actually, I got rid of the possession really very shortly after I meditated, after I began meditation.
After you taught yourself what to do.
Excuse me?
After you taught yourself what to do.
Yes, so meditation was the cure. And then I was clear of entities. But, you know, a long time went by. I was in that ashram for 22 years. And even in the ashram, I was kind of playing with the occult. And I got myself in trouble even there. But happily and luckily, after I left the ashram, I found a wonderful new thought teaching called Teaching of Intuitional Metaphysics, which none of your listeners have heard of. And I learned how to experience the divine presence and also how to heal, how to do spiritual healing, how to heal entities and earthbound spirits and vampirism and psychic ties and all these things.
When you started doing some of your work in earthbound spirits, what else did you unravel here when you started doing that?
Well, what I found was that the human energy field has all kinds of anomalies in it. And if a person is not clear, if they are a psychic sponge, what we call psychic sponge syndrome, then they absorb the vibrations around them like a sponge absorbs water. And I think probably a lot of your listeners, George, have this problem. They're sensitive to subtle vibrations, and they take on these vibrations. And as a result of that, they get hooks in their energy field. They get all kinds of anomalies in their energy field from psychic vampires. And also, there's a possibility of getting possessed.
For a long time, too.
It can happen, yes. A person can get an astral possession, and it will stay with them for a very long time until something happens, like someone comes to help them. But, for example, an addiction will draw in lower energies. If you have an addiction to substances such as alcohol or...
I've heard that. That's
yes,
true.
Yes, drugs. Because the fact is that when a person dies, you know, the body's dead. If the person was an addict, then they want to continue to enjoy their addiction. You know,
so they possess someone who's doing it.
Exactly, George. That's exactly what happens. And so that person suddenly takes on a personality change, and they're an addict now. But that's not the only case in which people get possessed. There's a lot of ways or reasons that a person does get possessed.
Sometimes they invite it, don't they?
Well, that would be somebody who actually wants to have an entity or an earthbound spirit or what they think is a high being, which ends up being a faker spirit, speak through them. For example, a channeler or a medium.
Do some of them, though, sometimes, Susan, also conjure up evil, like the devil and Satan, and they want that in them, basically?
Well, I suppose there might be some people who would want that. It's hard for me to imagine somebody.
But they're out there.
Yeah, I suppose there are people who you know, who might want to contact a demonic energy, or they want to use that demonic energy to gain power. That would be, for example, a case of a reptilian, what I call a reptilian.
Yeah, what is your definition of a reptilian?
Well, a reptilian would be somebody who is sort of like Malachi Martin's idea of being perfectly possessed. That's somebody who is using the energy or demonic energy to gain power, to gain fame, to gain fortune, and they have no incentive to be healed. They have no incentive for astral healing because they're very happy with their life. They're living a very happy life.
Sure.
They have all the glamour, all the illusion.
They're prepared to sell their souls, aren't they?
In a sense, they have sold their souls.
Yeah.
Because they have allowed demonic energies to take over their body and to live through them. Now, the soul doesn't really leave the body. Our soul is always here with us. But a possession or a demonic possession will attach itself to us, sort of like, it's almost like a piggyback.
At what point, though, do these people, these reptilian types, with this kind of, personality and nature, at what price do they pay? Because eventually, they got to pay the maker, right?
Well, you know, the thing is that people like that don't tend to go into the divine light after death. I'm sure you've heard of the near-death experience in which, well, I don't know if we even have to go through that. What the near-death experience where there's a bright, brilliant, beautiful light after death, and souls go into that light. But there are some souls who, for one reason or another, do not go into that light.
On their own?
Exactly. I mean, there's 15 basic reasons why a soul does not go into the light. And one of those reasons, of course, would be somebody who is demonically possessed. They, you know, they're not going to probably even want to go into the light.
Name off a few of these other reasons real quickly.
Okay, well, there's, of course, unfinished business. That would be one of the reasons. There's unawareness of their own death. There's a disbelief in the afterlife. There's arrogance and stubbornness, guilt and shame, fear and terror. There's a shame from committing suicide, over attachment to loved ones, over attachment to the earth plane, blame and vengeance, addiction, disunion from organ donations, a desire for recognition and power, contracts with dark forces. Those are the basic 15 reasons.
All right, let's talk more about this when we come back, Susan. Next hour, we'll take phone calls with you on psychic vampires and spirit possession. Well, Coast to Coast is Twittering now. That's right. Just go to www.twitter.com/coasttocoastam. Lots of messages on that for you. Also, if you haven't picked up Streamlink yet, just pennies a day. You get podcasting and downloads. And in about a week or so, we're going to give a free Streamlink weekend to those of you who haven't had the opportunity to try Streamlink yet. And we'll be back in just a moment as we continue our dialogue on psychic vampires and spirit possession with Dr. Susan Shumsky on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast to Coast. I'm George Norrie. We're with Susan Shumsky. Susan, you are on Twitter now as well, aren't you?
Yeah. Yeah, I've been on for about a month.
You like it?
Yeah, it's pretty cool, actually. I have it kind of automated, so I send out, like, inspirational messages. I write a whole bunch of them, and then I send out one inspirational message per day, and then I also send out information about things that I'm offering. And I do it all automated, so I don't have to sit there on Twitter all day, obviously.
Well, that's great. It is a great networking tool, though.
It's great. It really is good. I've had quite a few people sign up on my mailing list from Twitter.
Tell me a little bit about psychic ties and how and why would anybody ever cut them?
Okay, well, psychic ties are undue attachments or repulsions to any person, place, thing, organization, situation, circumstance, memory, or experience that is controlling you or that is adversely affecting you. And a psychic tie is created when you have an experience, perhaps a relationship, maybe you're having an argument with someone, and the residue left over from that argument is what we call a psychic tie or psychic cord. And everyone has psychic ties. We have psychic ties with people at work, with people at home. And it's really important to cut them because there's nothing positive about having a psychic tie. And I know a lot of people believe that psychic ties are good and they're great and it means you're going to have better relationships, but in fact, you have worse relationships when you have psychic ties. There's a difference between psychic ties and true love bonds.
It's a huge difference, isn't there?
Mm-hmm. Exactly. The psychic tie is that negative emotion, but the true love bond is unconditional love, and it's made up of golden ties, golden celestial ties. We would never want to cut those. We can't, even if we tried. But the psychic ties, if you cut psychic ties daily with the people at work and the people at home, you are guaranteed to have better, more intimate relationships.
Interesting. And how do you do that?
Very simple. Actually, everything that I teach as far as spiritual healing can be done by anyone. You just use a very simple formula for cutting psychic ties. You say something like this. You say, I now call upon, and you can call upon the God of your understanding, or you can call upon your higher self. Let's say call upon the Holy Spirit.
All right.
To cut any and all psychic ties between myself and, for example, my mother. These psychic ties are all now lovingly cut, lifted, blessed, healed, released, and let go. They're let go into the divine light.
Why would you want to cut ties, though, with your mother, psychically?
Because you want to cut the psychic ties. The psychic ties are the negative residue, the negative emotions that are left over from negative experiences that you've had with your mother, for example. But the love ties can never be broken.
Okay.
They remain intact.
Doesn't mean you don't deal with your mother anymore.
What happens is you deal with your mother on a much more loving, more intimate basis when you cut psychic ties with her daily.
You have done some work trying to free people from spells and hexes and black magic. First of all, how are they created? What happens? There's somebody out there who doesn't like somebody else. They conjure something up. How do they do that?
Well, they can do that by, there's a lot of ways to do it, but it's mainly just by the power of intention, like anything that we create.
So they're not particularly trained at hexes and spells, but through intention, they can do this.
You can do it even if you're not skilled in hexes and spells. You can do all kinds of mischief in other people's lives. And
I'm debating whether we should do a little test on that, but I'm not sure we should.
A test? What kind of a test, George?
About putting some kind of a hex on somebody and then seeing what happens. But
oh, no.
That's not a very good experiment, so we're going to pass on that.
I think so. I
you
don't
agree?
Think I would want to do that. I mean, I think the experiments that have been done on this show in the past where you focus on positive. You know, we can use the power of intention both ways, either for good or for evil. And so hexes and spells and black magic, you know, that's something that people do play with, and people want to manipulate other people. That's what I call psychic coercion.
How do you know that someone has a hex on you or a spell on you? How do you know?
Well, you know, unless you're really sensitive to subtle energies, I don't think you would know.
No, you just think that you're running into a bunch of bad luck or something,
exactly.
Right?
Exactly. Yeah. You'd have to probably go to somebody who can perceive these kinds of things. And it is possible to perceive them if you have clairvoyant, clairaudient, clairsentient ability. And by the way, George, everyone can develop those abilities.
Yes.
Everyone.
Why would someone want to place a spell on somebody, try to hurt somebody that way?
Well, they might have it in for them. It's vengeance, called vengeance.
Vengeance, jealousy, whatever.
Jealousy, or maybe they want to control or manipulate that person. Maybe they want to put a spell on that person just to coerce them to their own will, to bend them to their own will. And I call this a psychic bully or psychic dictator.
Is there something that people should do on a daily basis to rid themselves of this?
Exactly. There's a really simple formula that people can use to maintain what we call self-authority and integrity within their own individuality. And I call it the self-authority affirmation. And that's what they would do. They would use that affirmation, and also they would cut psychic ties with that person on a daily basis. Just keep cutting psychic ties and cutting psychic ties, because those spells, those hexes, those manipulative thoughts and intentions can be cut with what I call the psychic tie cut formula.
Then how do you know it's worked? What happens to you? You
because
feel
you,
different? What?
Yes, yes, George. You'll feel clear. You'll feel like you're yourself again. You'll no longer feel a tugging with that other person. You'll no longer feel that you are being controlled by someone and that they have a shadow over you. So would you like to hear the formula for self-authority?
Why, let's help people, sure.
This is such a powerful, powerful affirmation, and I really recommend that people use this on a daily basis. I've been using it on a daily basis.
And then tell me why it works, but go ahead.
For 25 years I've been using it, and it goes like this. I am in control. I am the only authority in my life. I am divinely protected by the light of my being. I close off my aura and body of light to the lower astral levels of mind, and I open to the spiritual world.
Okay, so you say that on a daily basis.
Exactly.
Why does it work?
It works because we create our own reality, George, through thoughts, words, and deeds. And thoughts, of course, we have intentions, we have thoughts, we have emotions, we have visions and visualizations. That's one way of creating our reality. The second way that we create our reality, which is very, very powerful, is words. That's why affirmation and prayer are so important. And the third way we create our reality is through our actions, what we do on a daily basis.
That's great information.
Mm-hmm.
I bet people's lives would change dramatically if they were able to do things like this.
Exactly. Happily and luckily, I've been able to touch tens of thousands of people with my books and their lives. I continually get letters and emails from people that say, your book has changed my life. This information has changed my life. I get that all the time. It's like on a daily basis I get this feedback, and it's so gratifying to hear that people can really take command of their own destiny and change it for good.
A week or so ago, I was talking with an actual psychic vampire.
And oh.
She claims that she does not go after people who don't want to be willing participants. You know, she'll do her vampirism with somebody who accepts her, okay, and they do what they do. But there are a lot of people who are under psychic attack, Susan, who aren't willing, who don't want to be part of this.
That's for sure.
What do they do?
I mean, all of us know people in our lives who are vampires. These are people who drain our energy.
Not necessarily bad people, right?
They might have the best of intentions, George.
Yeah.
A lot of the people have the best of intentions. They want to help you. They're always trying to help you. They're always calling you. They're always giving you advice. They really want to help you in every way.
But they drain you.
They're so needy, and they totally drain your energy. By the time you get off the phone with them, you feel like you've just been dragged through the mud. You're a mop. You've been dragged through the mud, you know, and you just want to go the other direction as fast as you can. Run away from this person.
You know, a friend of mine called me today and was telling me about this, and totally drained when she's with a certain person.
Exactly.
Totally drained. I mean, exactly. Emotionally, physically, and so what do you do? Run away or?
Yeah, now that's what I call the psychic sponge syndrome. If you're a psychic sponge, if you allow yourself to get hooked into by these people, then that will drain you. And there's so many psychic sponges running around, especially your listeners, because your listeners are people who are sensitive.
My listeners aren't sponges.
They're sensitive to subtle energies. They have some abilities. They have natural psychic abilities, so many of your listeners. So I know there's a lot of psychic sponges out there that need to keep their auras closed off. They need psychic protection. They need to learn how to, when they go out of their house, they need to know how to put that psychic or spiritual armor around them so that they won't get drained.
And I guess you can't walk around with a Faraday cage, right?
No, not exactly.
No.
Although that might work pretty well.
I'm sure it would work, but it would be very difficult to travel around
with. I think
so,
yeah.
But they're out there. These vampires are everywhere, aren't they?
They are everywhere, and some of them are malevolent. Some of them are just needy. Some of them really have big hearts. They have our best interests in mind, but they don't know how to really help us.
Tell me, Susan, about the ones who do not have our best interests at mind, that they know that they're psychic vampires, and they willingly go after people.
You know, I would say that these are, some of them are people, but I think you'll run into more of that situation when you're talking about what I call faker spirits. Now, faker spirits, George, these are the earthbound spirits who willingly want to attach themselves to living humans, manipulate and control them. And faker spirits, what they do is they will take on a high-sounding name, like a biblical name. They'll pretend to be some being that they're not. And then they will go and speak to channelers and mediums, and they will attempt to control them and manipulate them. And these are usually people who, you know, they're enticed by glamour and illusion, and they want to be famous. So, you know, that's what happens. And these, what we call faker spirits, they use what I call vanity feeding. They will feed on your ego.
Now, tell me about your work in exorcisms. What do you do?
Okay, well, I use a very simple...
I mean, you're not an ordained minister or anything like that, are you?
Actually, I am an ordained minister, but not in the Catholic religion in which exorcisms are actually done.
Okay.
But we use a very simple method of astral healing to depossess people. And it, rather than driving out the spirit, which is usually what, when you think of exorcism, you think of driving out the spirit, The trouble with exorcism is that the spirit will just go somewhere else. If you drive it out, it's just going to go possess a neighbor, a dog, a cat, a child.
Sure.
You know, so what my philosophy on this process is that we heal the entity and send it into the divine light because, you know, that's where it's supposed to go. It's not so supposed to be hanging around earthbound. It's supposed to cross over into the light.
Aren't you ever concerned about your own health and safety when you do this?
The thing is, I don't do it. My ego doesn't do the work. It's not like I'm using my energy to do this.
Right.
I allow myself to be a vehicle or a sort of a conduit for spirit to do the work through me. And because spirit is infinite energy and infinite light and infinite love and infinite joy, the more that I do healing for others, the more joy, energy, and fulfillment I get. So I actually gain by doing these healings.
Good for you.
Yeah, it works.
There are many people like you out there?
I think that there are probably a lot of people who are trying to help people and heal people. I think that what I teach is quite unique, though, George. I really do, because there aren't that many people that teach this method of depossession or that teach people how to do spiritual healing in this way, where we're really using the divine energy to flow through us.
Your website?
My website is drsusan.org.
And that's DR as opposed to spelling out doctor.
You
right?
can spell out doctor. That'll work.
It'll
also.
Work for you too?
Mm-hmm.
All right, good.
Both ways. And right now I'm offering for all of your listeners to take a free teleseminar on healing the astral mental plane.
How does that work?
Well, all they have to do is just go to my website and click on the link, or they just go straight to the teleseminar website, which is ghosthealing.com.
Are you a believer that mass prayer works? I am. I'll give you an example. We, this happened a couple of years ago, but somebody had written me an email about someone, and I just read it on the air, and I said, hey, you know, use your consciousness, use your prayer, and help this person. It worked.
It worked.
It worked. And, you know, now on a regular basis, we put people on what I call the prayer list. And on Fridays, people, at their own moment of time, it's not done collectively. We don't do it at a certain time. They just do it and concentrate on that list and for people who need it. And I got to tell you, Susan, I get more emails from the same people who said, you know, my grandmother is dying or somebody's sick or my cat is sick. All of a sudden, they're okay. Now, I'm sure it doesn't work in every case, but it is something.
The power of prayer, the power of intention is really, really amazing. And I have a free prayer circle every Saturday. We have a teleseminar.
Same thing then.
Yeah.
Now, do you do it for a wider group or just for a certain individual when you concentrate?
As far as when I pray for people,
yeah.
We take any kind of prayer requests, whether it's individual or collective for the entire world or whatever. We pray for whatever people ask for. And the power of intention, the power of prayer, it totally works. It's so amazing. I mean, I wrote a whole book called Miracle Prayer about prayer and how effective it is. And I teach something called scientific prayer.
What does it do? Gather the energy force in the universe and direct it to these individuals who are in need? What happens?
Well, I think we're mostly using the power of intention, and we're very, very powerful. We're much more powerful than we could ever imagine. And when we use the aspects of our being that are really spiritual aspects of our being, and we focus our intention, it really has a very profound result. And I get so many emails, so many people telling me all the miracles that have taken place in their life just from prayer.
Yeah, I believe it. I'm a strong believer in it, and I guess I always have been. Sometimes I didn't recognize it, but I sure do now, Susan.
Yeah, it totally works. I mean, prayer works because we create our own reality, George, through our thoughts, our words, and our deeds. And words are very, very powerful. I do a little demonstration of that where I use dowsing rods to measure people's auras, and I can tell you a little more about that.
All right, we'll do that when we come back. Plus, we'll take phone calls with Susan Shumsky, ghost, psychic, vampire, spirit possession, and your stories next on Coast to Coast AM.